Ollie, what would make you feel weirder? What's being shut up in a house for like all this time to avoid dying of a deadly contagion, or being forced to tromp through 100 degree Texas heat to find a house of weirdos and psychopaths and maybe not get killed by them or maybe get killed by them?
I feel like I'm just doing what I would be doing regardless of if there was a deadly contagion.
Okay, what's worse then? A house full of deadly psychopaths or 100 degree Texas heat?
Texas heat.
Yep. Because at least you can get away from psychopaths.
Yeah. Or at least they'll kill you quickly.
So you said you've... So this week's movie is, of course...
is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And so you said you've seen this?
Twice.
Twice? When?
When it was on Netflix.
Oh. What inspired you to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
I was just trying to find a horror movie.
Now, are you sure you watched the original and not one of the many remakes?
Yes.
Okay. So the classic 1970-something, seminal, groundbreaking horror movie, 1974's Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
Okay. Because there's like a million movies in this franchise, and several of them are remakes and reboots of this exact movie, which is ridiculous. I think because there's Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Leatherface, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, which is a remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 2003, which is a remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, which is a prequel to the 2003 remake. Texas Chainsaw 3D, which is a remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
But in 3D.
And then Leatherface, which is a prequel to Texas Chainsaw 3D. The remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So not only that, this movie has several prequels that attempt to explain where Leatherface came from.
So there's several different universes.
There is quite a few universes.
So it's like the MCU.
It's more like a Spider-Man's multiverse.
Ah, okay.
Well, yeah, but besides the times that like Leatherface has appeared in various comic books, like Hack Slash and I think like the Ash Evil Dead books. Like Leatherface is all over the place. Which is pretty amazing considering he's not a supernatural killer.
Yeah, he's just gross.
Yeah, so what do you remember about Texas Chainsaw the few times you've seen it?
It's gross.
Anything else?
I didn't like the characters very much.
Yeah, it's interesting. What can you tell me about the director, Tobe Hooper?
What would I ever be able to tell you about anyone?
Well, I don't know. Every time I talk to you, I make maybe this is the time. Maybe this is the moment where you're like, I'm going to look up
what's
this
his
filmmaker.
Name? Tony what? Hooper?
Tobe.
Tobe.
Tobe. T-O-B-E.
T-O. Okay.
Tobe Hooper.
I can tell
his real name is William, but he went by his middle name.
I can tell you he died in 2017.
He did.
And he went to the University of Texas at Austin.
He did.
That he's written several books,
mm-hmm.
two books.
Before he died.
Yeah. He was cited by the British Film Institute as one of the most influential horror filmmakers of all time.
Well, now you're just reading the Wikipedia article.
Yeah.
So Tobe Hooper was right at the forefront of the creation of the Texas Film Commission. He is like its first real success story. The Texas Film Commission was founded by the governor of Austin, Texas, which is also the capital of Texas, who's like lieutenant governor, owned a bunch. Like either the lieutenant governor owned a bunch of movie theaters or the governor owned a bunch of movie theaters. It's pretty like there's a lot of corruption going on here. But they were just trying to like attract filmmakers to Texas. Like let's get filmmakers here to get us some money. So they offered all these tax breaks. And
yes,
but they were also interested in like, no, we don't just want to like get Hollywood to film here. We want our own filmmakers. And so Tobe Hooper was like right there at the beginning. This movie, he had made one movie called Eggshells, which bombed, that was about like the hippie movement. I've watched some of it. It's a psychedelic freak out movie, a trippy little like peace, love and pizza rolls movie.
Pizza rolls.
Yeah, well, one of the stars was this guy named Kim Henkel. he and Kim Henkel decided to collaborate on another movie. So Texas Chainsaw Massacre came about because there was a teacher at the University of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was a teacher or an administrator, named Bill Parsley.
Mm-hmm.
He was vice president of development at Texas Tech. That's what it was. Who met Marilyn Burns, who was
isn't that where Noah goes?
Texas Tech, yes.
Yeah.
He met Marilyn Burns, who was a theater student,
mm-hmm.
and was like, "I'm gonna get this girl into motion pictures. I'm gonna groom her,
okay,
and make her a star." And legend is like foggy over whether this guy was just like I want to create one movie star, or if he was like a lascivious creep. Like, no one can really agree.
Yeah.
There's like stories, but they're all stories. Okay. Plus, Warren Scarron, the aide to the governor of Texas, wanted to create the film commission. These things were all happening at the same time. Meanwhile, Kim Henkel and Toby Hooper decided to start writing a movie. They decided on horror because that's the easiest to make because it required the least amount of money. So this guy, Bill Parsley, puts down 2/3 of the money for this movie, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which at the time was called Head Cheese.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And to sort of give you an idea of how creepy this kind of was, the name of his corporation that he puts the money in through was called MAB, which was Marilyn Burns' initials.
Hmm.
Like, he did it all for her, baby. He did it all for her. Toby Hooper was a filmmaker, up-and-coming filmmaker. He had made a lot of commercials and documentary stuff. He dropped out of University of Texas, by the way. He was just to make movies, to make money. And he said that the thing that most influenced his like early filmmaking career was he was shooting footage in an emergency room for a documentary when a guy was brought in who had been shot in the head.
Jesus Christ.
And he started filming the doctors trying to save this guy's life. And as the guy was like gurgling and dying, he kept filming and was like, "This is amazing. This is amazing. This is amazing. This is amazing." He goes home. He was like talking to people. He was like, "I shot this amazing footage. It was this transcendental experience. I can't believe it." The next day he watched the footage and just threw up all over the place.
Yep.
And was like, "This was horrible. What a horrible thing to see." And he was like, "Why was it cool? Why was it fine when I was filming it, but not when I was watching it?" And he suddenly realized like there's a difference between being behind the camera, being in front of the camera. What was fascinating behind the camera was repulsive in front of the camera. And he's like, "I can make horror. I know how to make horror now."
Yeah.
Kim Henkel, he and Kim Henkel decided to make a fairy tale, a retelling of Hansel and Gretel, where you find this house in the woods that actually has like a horrible creature inside. But they didn't want to make a monster movie because monsters are lame, which is true. They were both just like, especially Kim Henkel was like, "Monsters aren't scary, dude. What's the new big scary creature in America right now?"
People.
Because in the 1970s, there was this new thing that came along called the chainsaw.
The chainsaw.
Someone invented the chainsaw, the new monster. No, the FBI had coined a new term that was...
psycho?
Keep going.
Path?
Nope.
Psychotic?
What for a kind of unpredictable murderer?
What?
We call them a killer who has a method.
Serial killer?
Yes. Serial killers. We're suddenly taking the nation by storm. The FBI had coined this term for serial killers. Suddenly there were all these famous serial killers coming out of the woodwork. Not to mention at the end of the 60s, Charles Manson's group had done the Tate-LaBianca murders, killed Sharon Tate. Roman Polanski went on to make his version of Macbeth, was like the bloodiest, most nihilistic movie ever made, according to some people. People were like, "Is Polanski as much a monster as his murderers?" We know now that yes, he is.
Mm-hmm.
He never murdered anybody. He maybe did something even worse.
Maybe. He was found guilty.
He was found guilty. But I'm just saying this like, is his crime worse than murdering a pregnant woman and like, you know, a bunch of her friends? Like, I think it's apples to oranges. It's two very different crimes that are
yeah.
Equally horrendous. But people were just like, the hippies were creeps. The hippies were weird. Look what it led to. Toby Hooper was disillusioned by the hippie movement, by the peace, love, and pizza rolls movement. And out of all this, also he came from a broken family. he thought that there was a god of horror to be mined in the family unit, and the idea.
Wow, sounds like someone else we know.
Oh, and also people were being put out of work by industrialization, and he was like, "I want to make a movie based on these out of the way Texas towns that I grew up traveling through with my mother, who was split up from my father, and sort of focus on these rural people who have been disenfranchised by progress." And out of all that came out of that, and out of this whole Marilyn Burns and the guy trying to make her famous, and out of all this came this weird mishmash called the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which was considered the most horrific movie at the time. It's still considered by some people to be the most horrific movie ever made, and starred one of my dad's friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my father's high school buddies, high school friends, Edwin Neal, has a lead role in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I hope to find out a little bit more about that before we shoot the main part of this movie we're making. Record the main part of this podcast. I want to find out a little bit more about Edwin Neal.
You should check in with your parents.
I was going to say, my father and I don't have much in common. We don't have a whole lot to talk about. Whenever I talk about movies, though, and mention horror films, he always, always, always says, "Did you know that?" As you experience with me, my father tells the same stories over and over again. But he's like, "Did you know that I grew up, one of my high school buddies, Ed Neal, is in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?" I'm like, "Yes, I do know that. You tell me that every time I mention movies." But I'm always happy to hear it because my dad is very proud of it. And it's one of the few things that we can relate to each other on. The fact that I don't think my dad's – I mean, he may not have – I don't think he's ever seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Probably for the best.
It's not Ruben Gonzalez's kind of movie.
Yeah.
Going on with you, I have seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre many times. It was just sort of one of those movies that I watched a lot as a teenager, just because it was very different from the other horror movies that were coming out when I was a teen.
Mm-hmm.
But Leatherface and this movie sort of began, It and Halloween sort of created the masked killer genre in America.
Mm-hmm.
Because unlike other masked killers, he wasn't trying to hide his identity. His mask was his identity. Mm-hmm. Unlike what had come before, the character was the costume. And we'd see that with The Shape from Halloween and with Jason Voorhees and all the other mask killers.
Scream.
Right.
Ghostface.
Before then, we had Giallo films from Italy, which we will be watching a few in this series.
Good.
Giallo films, though, it was always a killer with a motive. They were just they just went about their business very creepily. Leatherface and his family, they have a motive, but Leatherface himself is a bit of a blank. And we can talk about – I can't wait to talk to you about this movie because although it's fairly straightforward, there's really weird character development and strange layers in this mm-hmm. movie that I'm curious to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
Because our protagonists are our Scooby gang, who stumbles upon the goings-on in the Texas Chainsaw House, aren't necessarily the sympathetic characters in this movie.
No.
Except for maybe Marilyn Burns, but certainly not that guy in the wheelchair. we'll talk about Paul Partain. So, Ollie.
Yeah?
I feel like we're on a little bit of even footing here, because you've seen this movie recently, and I haven't, so we're kind of going into this as co-equals, as equals.
Yeah, but unlike most of these movies.
So, Ollie, are you ready to watch The Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Yeah, once I do it.
Once you do it, yes. And then we will get back together and discuss The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, I thought we were going to discuss another movie.
Nope. The Spirit of the Beehive. The long lost Spirit of the Beehive, which one day we will see.
One day.
One day we will see it. So, everybody, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And it's Del Toro time. Why? Okay, let's time it this time. Let's just say it as if nothing's weird, okay?
Okay.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly. And it's Del Toro time.
It didn't work again. Okay, this time let's say it.
Why do you have such a weird pause there?
Okay, this time let's just say it and like just try to just barrel through it, okay?
Okay.
Okay. I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly. And it's Del Toro time. Why do you do that weird pause?
Before what? Which weird pause?
The one that's after I say my name.
I'm not pausing. I think it's the lag. Okay, this time pretend there's no pause. Here we go.
Okay.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly. And it's Del Toro time. Jesus.
That was worse.
We're gonna leave all those attempts in.
Hell yeah. All right. See you on the other side.
Bye.
You're here.
I am here. We're not having the same struggle as before.
Fingers crossed. Who knows what'll happen? You may mysteriously disappear at any point. Who knows?
I hope not.
You will disappear like a young adult into a ramshackle old Texas house.
That's a funny joke, because we both know that I'd never go anywhere near a creepy house.
I know you'd never go anywhere near Texas. You're in no danger.
Nope.
You've turned down free trips to Texas in the last few years.
Listen.
Oh my goodness gracious. So you watched the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, as much as one can truly watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Ladies and gentlemen listening at home and others, this is another case of Ollie and I having to watch a movie in separate places at separate times just because of our situation. So we don't have the fun of bantering back and forth during the movie.
No, we do not.
Which I believe could have made this movie a little bit of an easier pill to swallow.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I haven't seen it before.
It's not like I haven't seen it before, but I still was just like, ugh. Like,
I'm not a big fan of, you know, an insane amount of gore.
There's not an insane amount of gore in this, though.
But it's enough.
You don't see a whole lot. It's all implied. Most of it's implied.
I feel like it'd be better if I just saw it.
Yeah. So we watched the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and this is like the several time for both of us. I saw it a lot when I was younger, and it didn't really like, I was always just like, oh, this is a pretty good movie. Like, I enjoy this movie. And this time I watched it and I was like, I never need to see this again. Like, I just found nothing to enjoy about it this time. I acknowledge still that it's a great horror film, but I was like, I don't enjoy this. I don't enjoy this at all.
Yeah, see, every time I've seen this movie, I've said I never need to see it again.
Now, under what circumstances have you seen it?
The first time was on Netflix, when I was just looking for something to watch.
Yeah.
And the second time was on Netflix, when I was really sick and looking for something to watch.
This is a good sick bed movie.
No, it's not.
It's got a lot of sausages and a lot of people screaming. It's got so much screaming.
So much.
So much, like, to the point where I had my headphones on watching it and I was nervous that it was disrupting people downstairs. I was like, is this so loud? Is this as loud as it feels? Answer, yes, is this as loud as it feels? So this is a movie about a group of teenagers or young adults, I guess. They're not like teens, who set off into Texas and end up in the house of crazed cannibals. And only one of them survives, barely escapes. That's
Survivor Girl.
That's essentially the plot. But there's actually so much more going on in this movie than like the bare bones plot gives away.
There's too much going on in this movie.
I would really like to focus on the weird like folk magic aspect of it. Like the bizarre,
like demons?
These people aren't just cannibals. They worship something or believe in something that is outside of like mainstream knowledge, because
I was doing my own research this morning.
Yeah.
On fandom.com, because
you know
apparently the two old people were possessed by demons.
Who says this?
Fandom.com.
Fandom.com.
It has a list of the deaths.
Yeah.
List of deaths. And the two top ones are Mr. Hardesty Enright and Mrs. Hardesty Enright. And the cause of death was possession.
From what movie, though? Are you sure it's not from like a different...
I'm sure. The title of it is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1974.
Because I've never heard any official like statement that there was actually demon possession involved.
Maybe it's mentioned somewhere else. I don't know. That's just what I'm reading.
Well, that is interesting because there is... So starting in the very beginning of the movie, they pick up the hitchhiker played by Ed Neal. He's the guy who was the friend of my dad's.
Yes.
And... he does some like crazy blood rituals. Like first he cuts himself, which seems just like sort of obnoxious and weird. But then he does like the thing with the photograph, which he lights on fire, which is definitely like he's performing some kind of like ritual.
Yeah.
And then they keep going on about the shape he made on the side of their van when they dumped him on the side of the road. He like rubbed his blood in a particular shape and they're like, what is this? And a big deal is made out of it, but they never follow up on it because they all end up getting killed.
You know, honestly, that would be the least of my concerns in this situation. Actually, I wouldn't even be in this situation, let's be real.
I find it fascinating. And there's all the like sort of Blair Witchy like bone... like effigies hanging up around the place that are like very deliberately put there. Like there's so much going on under the surface of this movie, like that sort of just on the edges of the screen, and that's not present in the script, but is very clearly intended to be seen by Toby Hooper. I as unpleasant as I find the actual movie, I am fascinated by the amount of detail that went into putting it together.
Yeah, it's a terrible, terribly great movie.
Well, let's run down the cast, run down the characters, because I feel like getting into each one of them individually is will sort of take us through the plot.
Yeah.
So our main character, our final girl. Is Sally
Hardesty.
Yep, Sally Hardesty, played by Marilyn Burns, the reason this movie got financed. and so what do we think of Sally? What do we think of Marilyn's portrayal of Sally?
I like Sally.
Yeah.
As much as I like anyone in this movie.
Like she definitely goes through quite a bit of hell in this movie. And by she, I mean Marilyn Burns.
Yep.
Not necessarily Sally Hardesty, who does go through hell, but Marilyn Burns went through her own particular hell.
Yeah.
Up to and including having her finger actually cut during the dinner sequence because they just couldn't get a good enough response out of this poor traumatized woman. So they just went ahead and cut her finger open on camera.
As you do.
Just for giggles. Because... almost every scratch and bruise and much of the blood you see on Marilyn Burns is actually hers.
Great.
Because it was so unpleasant, a filming experience. So like when she had to run through the trees, she had to run through the trees, the bushes, and she was actually scraped and scratched and battered and bruised during this whole thing. And they all hated each other so much by the end of the filming that they were not gentle with each other. And also remember, it was 100 degrees in the Texas heat in an unair conditioned farmhouse.
Gross.
Where they were filming all of this. And Gunnar Hansen, who played Leatherface, was not allowed to wash his clothes.
Gross.
So everything smelled, everything was unpleasant, everyone was sick of each other, and they were hardly getting paid anything.
Why would they make this movie?
Because I guess this is what you did in the 70s. You went out and you made an indie film that made millions upon millions of dollars for your investors, and then none of you actually saw the money. So it's, you know, it's the story behind this is always that, you know, Toby Hooper was inspired by Ed Gein, serial killer Ed Gein. Well, quote unquote serial killer. He killed two people like years apart, but the grave robber and fashioner of body parts into various things, Ed Gein.
Yes.
But again, like that's just it's just elements of his story that made it into the movie.
I was going to say that even though that there's so many like legends around this saying because of the fact that it was portrayed as being based off of a true story.
Yes. Yeah. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, it was framed that way to bum up publicity.
Mm-hmm.
Publicity.
Good old Felicity Jones, star of Rogue One.
And people believed it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it worked.
Yeah.
The opening narration is done by our friend and yours, star of Night Court. Portrayal of shady lawyer Dan Fielding, John Larroquette, in one of his earliest on-screen appearances as the voice of the narrator.
Is that count as an on-screen appearance?
Or off-screen appearance? I don't know. He did reprise the role of opening narrator in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake done by the Michael Bay company. Because, I mean, by that point, he wasn't doing anything else, so...
Yeah.
So Marilyn Burns, she is the survivor. She is barely the survivor of this movie. She makes it. She only makes it out because as she's being chased out of the house by the hitchhiker, he's just goofing around.
Yeah,
like he's barely chasing her. He's like kind of dancing around. I'm like, if he had just put on a bit of speed, he would have just grabbed her and it would have been all over for her.
It's all about that hubris.
It's all about the hubris.
And then he gets destroyed.
He gets quite destroyed by
an 18-wheeler.
By the dual truck.
Yep.
It'd be awesome if it was just the dual truck. And the truck was like, "Whoa, my bad."
It turns out that the hitchhiker was actually just the guy from Duel. So crazy because of the truck.
Wandered out into the wilderness and found a family of cannibals.
Yeah. And he just, you know, he was having such an identity crisis.
So Sally is traveling with her brother, Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal with Franklin?
He's the worst.
Is he at all like Franklin the cartoon turtle from the Franklin books?
I would not know. Franklin, I can't remember.
Well, I'll lay it out for you. Franklin the cartoon turtle was a sweet little boy who learned his lessons.
No. Then no, he's not.
Okay. No, what is Franklin like?
The worst. He's absolutely awful and I hate him.
So Franklin is... You know what? He's always described as like heavyset, but he's barely heavyset.
Yeah.
Like he's just sort of like a solidly built young man.
Mm-hmm.
He is in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of an unusual thing in when you look at the history of these movies.
Doesn't make him any more sympathetic.
He is... In one hand, I'm like, Franklin is the most obnoxious character ever committed to film.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I'm like, I kind of feel bad for him because it kind of sucks. Like, he hangs out with his sister and her super cool, attractive friends. And... I don't know. They don't treat him bad, but I just feel like he's just kind of the fifth wheel, and he just probably just is always made to feel like the fifth wheel. And he's trying to be interesting. He's trying to like have conversations and stuff, but he's a little socially awkward. He makes raspberry noises with his tongue.
He still sucks.
I'm trying to have sympathy for poor Franklin here.
I have no sympathy.
He has one of the few truly on-screen deaths.
As someone who is often, who in my old friendships was often made to feel like the fifth wheel, and who was incredibly socially awkward, I have no sympathy towards him. Zero sympathy towards this guy.
You never stood on the bottom floor of an abandoned building and went...
No.
Because that's the best part of this movie.
I mean, yes, you're right. Still zero sympathy.
Still zero sympathy for poor Franklin.
No, not poor Franklin. Just jerk Franklin.
I wouldn't say he's a jerk. He's just obnoxious.
I hate him.
He's played by Paul Partain, who died in 2005. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't do a whole lot of movies. he didn't. he got, you know, he ended up working a sales job in real life. He popped up in like Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Next Generation as an orderly. He had a bit part. His final film role was in The Life of David Gale, uncredited.
That's a shame.
That's it. Like, he didn't really pursue acting after this much. So, yeah, but he's not bad in the role.
No.
As an actor, as someone who has performed, I can tell you that it is tough to willingly play an unlikable character.
Yes.
Now, there's a lot of sympathy for Franklin online. People think that, like, that everyone deserved to die for treating Franklin so poorly.
Well, I think everyone deserves to die for being just a bunch of jerks.
Are they jerks?
No, they're just teenagers.
Yeah, like, they're not really jerks. They, even in the scenes where, like, they encounter, like, the townsfolk, they're not, like, the obnoxious, like, making fun of the townsfolk type
people.
They're
not the cabin in the woods kids.
Right. And they do pick up a hitchhiker. They're like, yeah. Hey, a hitchhiker. I mean, it's the 70s, but they're still just like, hey, a hitchhiker.
No wonder the 70s had so many serial killers.
Right. It was easy. Like, you just... There they were. You pick up, you stand on the side of the road, wait for someone to pick you up, and then you kill them. Or you drive down the road, wait to pick up someone and kill them.
I saw an article about people like being weirded out that millennials don't answer the door if they're not expecting anyone.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what? No wonder. Why would anyone? What? I just don't understand why anyone would answer the door if they're not expecting anyone.
I'm going to go on record as saying I have never liked answering the door. Period. Even before like the turn of the century, I never liked answering. That is my pride. I have never trusted doorbells.
That's the only reason you haven't been murdered.
That's the only reason. So Sally has a boyfriend named
Jerry,
played by Alan Danziger.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the list cast and stuff right now, so that's the only reason I know this.
So Jerry is her boyfriend. Played by Alan Danziger, who is still alive. And what's wonderful is if you ever want to meet any of these actors who are still alive from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and we ever get out of quarantine, they're almost always at like horror conventions.
Oh, nice.
Because they didn't do a whole lot after Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So they, you know, they get a few extra bucks by signing autographs. So Jerry, the boy, is it her boyfriend? Is he her boyfriend? Like, he's just kind of a nice guy.
Yeah.
just a guy. Yeah. I could always had trouble remembering if which one was Jerry and which one was Kirk. So Kirk looks like just some guy.
Yes.
Just some guy. He could look like some guy who walked in your house today.
Yes.
Kirk. Jerry looks like...
Looks 40.
He looks like a refugee from that 70s show.
Are they all supposed to be like college students?
I don't know. Like how old? I think they were
40.
I think they were college age at the time the movie was made. Jerry has giant hair and glasses.
Yes.
He is the boyfriend of Sally Hardesty, our main character. Mm-hmm. We got that figured out. Kirk and Pam are the other couple.
Yes.
Pam is kind of not a character.
I mean, you're not wrong.
She's there. She wears short shorts and a backless top.
Yeah, she's that girl from the horror movie.
Yes, but like, as much as we like to talk about how like horror films have these like conventions and these stereotypes, and as much as it almost seems like Texas Chainsaw Massacre follows those conventions and stereotypes, being one of the early slasher type movies, it's amazing that like these people, A, they aren't high schoolers, they're young adults. B, they're not promiscuous, like they're a couple, like these are two couples. Mm-hmm. They're not sitting around smoking pot or angering the locals. Mm-hmm. They're actually there because Sally's because there have been a series of grave desecrations in the area, and Sally wants to go out and make sure her grandfather's grave hasn't been desecrated. Like, that's a perfect, that's a noble thing for a granddaughter to do. That's why she and Franklin are out there, and they brought their friends along.
It's also why I would never, ever be in this situation, because I'd never do that.
You would never go to see if my grave was desecrated?
You're my father, not my grandfather.
Right, but would you, if my grave was, if you were afraid that my grave was desecrated,
I would call someone.
That's probably a good idea.
I'd be like, now, hey, I heard there were some grave desecrations and my father's buried here. Can you check to see if his grave was desecrated?
In the 1970s, that wasn't as much of an option. They didn't know anybody in the area. They had, so they actually had to hoof it out there. Mm-hmm. And what's funny is they get to the graveyard and it's like a drinking party.
Yep.
Or something. There's a guy who's like drunk on the ground and he's really creepy. He's like sitting in a big tire and he's upside down and he says something to the camera. And I'm like, I don't understand what's happening. Who are these people?
No one knows.
But then a guy's like, come this way and I'll show you your grandpa's grave. And you're like, oh no, what's going to happen to her with this? Nothing. Like, he's just a friendly guy.
Yeah.
He is a little like handsy. He does put his arm around her.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Was that not normal in the 70s?
That was totally normal in the 70s. He was acting like a monk.
Jesus.
For the 70s. He may as well not even have been in the same area as her. So they find out that the grave is okay. Mm-hmm. They pick up a hitchhiker played by Ed Neal. Who is my father's age, and who is very much involved in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre circuit. Like, he is very active. He is very proud of the role he played. He also does voices for like DC. He's done the voice of Two-Face, Killer Croc, Harvey Bullock on like DC online games.
Nice.
He does a lot of video game voices.
To meet this man.
He did a lot of anime dubs. He's like the one guy besides like Gunnar Hansen who has like an extensive resume. Yeah, he was in DC Universe Online, Metroid Prime 3, Deus Ex. He did dubs for anime like Final Fantasy anime. He played Dr. Robotnik in the OAV anime Sonic the Hedgehog movie, which isn't the most common thing to find, but if you can find it online, it's like, oh, there's Ed O'Neill's, or not Ed O'Neill, there's Ed Neal's Dr. Robotnik.
Why do you keep saying Ed O'Neill?
Because Ed O'Neill is an actor from Modern Family and Married with Children. He's a very famous actor. And he's on, like, he was in JFK. He's in My Boyfriend's Back. He's in movies. And he still works. So, yeah, and he still lives in Austin, Texas.
Nice.
So, yeah, so they pick up Edwin Neal, the hitchhiker, who's in the movie only known as the hitchhiker. Mm-hmm. He gets a name in later movies, but...
He's 6'2"?
He's a tall man. One tall man. And this guy is... There's something wrong going on with the man.
Oh, really?
Something quite wrong. He's a little goofy, but it's from him that we learn that his family used to be in the slaughterhouse business, mm-hmm. but that they have been put out of work by industrialization, by the mechanization of the slaughterhouses. They don't need people who can manually kill animals anymore. The machines do it.
Yeah.
And he ain't happy about that. He borrows Franklin's knife and cuts his own hand and laughs at it. Mm-hmm. He takes a picture of the group and tries to sell it to them. They say no, so he sets the photo on fire. And in a little ritual in the van, which makes them mad, they throw him out. But before they throw him out, he cuts Franklin's arm with his own knife, mm-hmm. a straight razor, which in real life would be quite a serious injury.
Yeah.
But in this movie, they just sort of bandage it up and all is good.
That seems like a bad idea.
It's It's going to get infected.
Well, he doesn't live long enough for it to get infected.
He does not. Luckily, he does not live long enough for it to get infected. Now, this is interesting because every time I have seen this movie, I'm like, just pay him the for his photograph.
Yeah.
Like this is a crazy guy who's cut himself up and is acting really abnormal. Just give him some money for the picture. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if they had just paid him for the picture, would they have been okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think they would have. I think he would have been like, thanks for the money. And I would have been like, can we drop you off? And that would be it. Yeah. Instead, they get all angry at him and they throw him out.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that to the crazy hitchhiker.
If you ever pick up a crazy hitchhiker, which don't do in the first place.
Right.
Just ask them where you can drop them off and be nice to them and then move on with your life.
Except they can't move on with their life because they'd run out of gas.
Yeah. Do you think that if they had... Well, because he probably wouldn't have put the blood on the truck, the car, so...
That's true. So do you think that the mark on the car is like a sign to the other people that these are the next victims?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, what else would it be?
I didn't know if he was trying to like cast a spell.
I just think it's just him marking the car.
Great.
Because there's other people on the road and they don't get eaten.
Yeah.
So, you know, what else would it be?
I guess that's true, but how do they know that? I guess so. The van ends up running out of gas. Mm-hmm. If they hadn't run out of gas, though, they wouldn't have been stuck. Like, the only reason they actually end up at the house is because they go there. They're not captured and taken to the house. They actually all go to the house.
Yeah.
Except for Sally and Franklin, but that happens like after other people have died and Leatherface is out searching. Mm-hmm. So I'm confused. Like, if the hitchhiker was marking their van, like to what end? Because they don't go after the van. You dig?
They might have. Like, if they hadn't been almost out of gas, they might have done something to the van later.
Maybe. But they would have had to have stopped the van.
It's relatively easy to stop a van.
Oh, really? How many vans have you stopped?
Well, I haven't needed to stop any vans, but I assume that, you know, you could run in front of the van. They clearly don't care about bodily injuries to themselves.
It's true.
They could like these teenagers or these young adults stopped for a random hitchhiker. It's not that difficult to stop this van.
They kick out Ed Neal. They end up at Sally's grandfather's house, which is in a bad shape.
Just like everything else in this town.
And she's like, I think there was an old swimming hole in the back. And that's when Pam and Jerry?
Technically,
Kirk.
No, Kirk. Technically, she's not the one who tells them.
Franklin does.
Yeah.
Franklin,
he's sick
does.
Of them.
Yes. Go. Yeah, because they're upstairs having a good time. Franklin can't go upstairs. And that's when he starts blowing raspberries at them. Mm-hmm. He's not the only one in the movie who blows raspberries, though. Ed Neal later does, too. And I'm like, is this like a Toby Hooper thing? Was he like, director's like signature character blows raspberry. So, yeah, he tells them, there's an old swimming hole. You can go down if you find it. And so Pam and Kirk go looking for the old swimming hole. They find it, but it's dry. Mm-hmm. And that's when Kirk is like, hey, I see this other farmhouse over here. Maybe they have gas. Mm-hmm. And except for like all the bone sculptures.
I don't understand these people.
Yeah. I think that's part of the horror aspect of it.
Maybe it's just because I live in modern times, so I don't have to like, I wouldn't have to drive out to see if my grandfather's grave had been desecrated.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're talking about Pam and Kirk.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the cannibals who made bone sculptures.
No, I understand them.
Okay.
I mean, they're bananas, so like, there's not Like, it's just, they're bananas. And, you know, there's plenty of, I'm sure there's plenty of psychological stuff to look at with them. I just don't understand these kids.
Well, Kirk wants to get gas. I think that's the long and short of it.
Yeah, but how would you look at that house and be like, maybe they have gas?
Well, okay, what I was saying is, besides the bone sculptures hanging up outside, which you don't really notice at first, the house looks pretty well cared for from the outside. It's nicely painted. It's white. It's not, like, obviously falling apart or anything. From the outside, it just looks like that a would farm, be, an inhabited that would, farmhouse.
That would be my first warning sign. Everything else looks kind of, you know, trash.
Yeah. And
then there's just this nice... I would be like, serial killers definitely live there.
Well, he goes to the house, he knocks on the door, and no one answers. Now, this is the... So, at this point, I'm still just like, Kirk is just doing what, like, a stand-up guy's just trying to... He's just trying to be a stand-up guy and, like, take care of his friends, get them out of Dodge. Mm-hmm. At this point, he is still A-OK in my book. He stops being A-OK in my book when he does the dumb thing. And what is the dumb thing?
What is the dumb thing?
You just go in the house.
Yeah, that's dumb.
If no one answers the door, my friends, and of course I'm speaking to a character from 1974. If no one answers the door, don't just go in the house. That never leads to anything good.
Also, you could be arrested for trespassing.
I was going to say at best, you find a dead body. That's best case scenario in this situation. You walk into an old farmhouse in the middle of Nowheresville when no one answers the door you just knocked on, even though there is a generator running outside, you're coming across a dead body.
Or you get a shotgun aimed at your face.
Right. Yeah. Next, you're going to get a shotgun in your face and you're going to be grabbed and pulled inside. Worst case scenario happens to Kirk and Pam.
They get horribly, horribly murdered.
Kirk has one of the most shockingly effective deaths in horror history, where he wanders into the house. He wanders into a hallway, like through a doorway, into a red hall. Leatherface, you don't know who it is. This giant looms up behind him wearing a human skin mask, picks up his sledgehammer, whomps him over the head. He falls. His body just starts like shimmying and shaking. Mm-hmm. Leatherface slams the metal door, and that's it.
Yep.
It happens in like 10 seconds.
Yep.
It's brutal. It's gruesome without any blood. And Gunnar Hansen actually did hit William Vale over the head.
Oh my God.
In that scene, and William Vale actually did fall down because of that, and they just kept rolling the camera,
everyone who got killed in this movie actually was killed in this
movie. It was a bad news bears, but it was a very effective scene. It's our first, like, it's a shocking moment of violence. Again, no blood. Mm-hmm. But then of course Pam goes looking for Kirk.
You would hear this. This is something you would hear outside.
No,
of the house.
And you know why? The brilliance, that generator.
Oh, yeah.
That generator running covers up so much noise. We get the greatest non-violent shot in horror, which is the shot of Pam from below walking up to the farmhouse. Mm-hmm. Iconic shot. She is grabbed by Leatherface.
I feel so bad for her.
And what happens to poor Pam?
She gets stuck on a meat hook.
After he kills her?
No.
No. Just picks her up, sticks her on a meat hook through her spine, I guess, or her shoulder blades. Mm-hmm. We don't see it. Again, we don't see it. We don't see any blood. We just see him do it, but we don't see the wound or anything. Now, in the remake, you see it in all of its gruesome, gory delight. But in the original version, she just screams and reaches up to try to grab the hook, and Leatherface just goes about his business.
Yeah.
Chainsawing up a body.
You know, as one does.
In front of her. I guess her boyfriend's body in front of her.
Who else would it be?
I don't know. I don't know. I suddenly was just like, how do we even know it's him? Could have been someone else.
It's him.
And that makes the scene even more horrific. Mm-hmm. Because she's being she's in excruciating pain. She's going to die. She has to watch her boyfriend get sawed up. Her life went from idyllic to horror in like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And then, as we later learn, she's not even going to be dead for a while.
Nope.
Because, well, back to our friends who are not being gruesomely murdered by a skin-faced behemoth.
You know, a skin-faced person. What does that mean?
Leatherface is played by Gunnar Hansen. He died in 2015.
He was born in Iceland.
Who wasn't?
A lot of people. He's 6'4".
You gotta have giant men in these movies.
He went to the University of Texas in Austin.
Everyone did.
He was born in Reykjavik, Iceland, but went to Austin High School. He was in a lot of stuff that is spooky.
So Gunnar Hansen is famous for playing Leatherface in the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He did not play Leatherface in other Texas Chainsaw Massacres. Even though when you say Leatherface, you think Gunnar Hansen, but... Yeah, different actors played Leatherface throughout the years. Gunnar Hansen's just the most famous of them because he kind of built his career out of it. He did appear in a lot of movies that have the word chainsaw in them.
Yeah.
Chainsaw Sally, Tex Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers.
He was in Repligator.
Oh, good. I was hoping he was in Repligator. He's in Reykjavik Whale Watching Massacre.
Nice.
Which is filmed in Iceland and does star an Icelandic man. He plays Captain Peter.
He was in Chainsaw Sally.
Reviews for the Reykjavik Whale Watching Massacre. It says, due to the lack of horror films and the grindhouse feel to the film, many audience members could not take it seriously, not noticing the subtle hints of comedy throughout the movie. Advertisements, which started with the words, "the first Icelandic thriller," were removed, and the producers added in, "should only be seen if you have a sense of humor."
That's terrible.
That's like, I don't know, I made a bad movie and I'm going to blame the audience for not getting it. Reykjavik Whale Watching Massacre. Hunting humans in the cold Icelandic waters. Now I have to see this movie. So yeah, Gunnar Hansen, he died in 2015, but he was a staple, a fixture at the various horror conventions, which is probably why I think of just him as Leatherface, because he's the one who made the biggest deal about it.
Yeah.
So Sally and Franklin and Sally's boyfriend, Jerry.
Jerry.
Are hanging out, wondering what's up with their friends. So Jerry goes searching for Pam and Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens to poor Jer?
Dead.
He gets killed. He finds Sally in a freezer.
Yeah.
He opens the freezer, sees Sally, presumably her body, until she wakes up and starts screaming.
Yeah.
Leatherface runs in, hammers Jerry over the head, throws Sally... What?
This movie would have been made so much better if every time Leatherface came in, Hammer Time started playing.
The Hammer Time was not a song at that point.
Yeah, I know. I think someone should go back in and edit that.
I am sure that exists. Listeners, if it does not exist, make it for us, please. Hammer Time. He pushes Sally back into the freezer. And now this is the part that I love. Is Leatherface, his house is being invaded by teens or by young adults. And he sits down in a chair and he puts his head in his hands. And you're like, oh, he's worried. He's upset by all this. This isn't just a crazed killer who's like, yes, more victims. He's like, why do all these people keep coming in my house? And he's worried about the fact that he seems to have lost control of the situation. We'll soon learn why he's so worried, because he's got a family and they're not nice to him.
Yeah.
So we got worried Leatherface. Again, he's a hulking behemoth. You never see his face. It's hidden behind these masks he wears made of human skin. They're human faces. They're faces he wears over his face. You see his eyes, though. They're normal-looking eyes. Like, he just has a regular eyes. You see his mouth. It seems to be a pretty normal-looking mouth. Later films will establish that Leatherface is, like, hideously deformed.
That's dumb.
But in truth... like, I think it just works as, like, you don't know what's going on with this guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know why he's wearing masks. You don't know what happened to him. There's two or three movies that try to tell his backstory. And it's always better just leaving it a mystery. But again, Leatherface is not a monster.
He's just a guy.
He's just a sad guy. I mean, who kills people with sledgehammer?
It's funny, because I think he kills more people with a sledgehammer than he does with a chainsaw.
Right. So he gets... Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because he just uses the chainsaw for, like, chopping bodies up. And, well, he gets one good kill in that's coming. So Sally and Franklin are still out there. At one point in the movie, we forgot to point this out, we get to see Franklin pee in a can. I just wanted to point that out.
He pees
in a can, and while he's peeing in the can, his wheelchair falls down a hill. But as he's falling, you see that his pants are zipped up. And I was always, even the first time I watched this, I was like, his ding dong would be out. Like, he was literally in the middle of peeing in a can when his wheelchair fell down the hill, and now he's all zipped up. That's like the least believable part of this movie to me. And it's the part that always bugs me.
Maybe not he's just really good at zipping his pants up really quickly.
While he falls.
Maybe this isn't the first time it's happened.
That's true. Maybe he was just peeing in his pants and was trying to pretend he was peeing in a can.
You would still notice if he was peeing his pants, though.
That's true. That's very true. It's also the classic. I think if this is a Texas thing, I am sure it is beyond Texas. The can of pee in the car.
You know, that
which
thing.
which is a thing that I had to deal with as a child. I had a friend who always had a pee can.
I don't want to know this
in the back seat of the car when we were kids.
His this mom is something always, that I can't even deal with after even watching this.
It was a jar, actually. And that's if gross. If he had to pee, he was supposed to pee in the jar. A pee jar. I don't hear about that happening much these days. Maybe it's because, like, people... What?
No, you keep talking.
I was going to say, maybe it's because, like, everywhere I go, I live near things that have bathrooms in them.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah.
And maybe it's because people are just better about going to the bathroom before road trip.
In any case, I was always terrified that he was going to have to whip out the pee jar while I was in the car with him. It never happened, but I did see the jar quite a few times. So anyway, Leatherface kills Franklin with chainsaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he just shows up and sticks a chainsaw through Franklin's chest.
5 times.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. And what don't we see, though? Everything. We don't see the actual wounds.
Nope.
Yeah, we see it all from the behind Franklin. Yeah. Again, no blood, just chainsaw going in. It's very dark. Sally runs off.
Yeah.
As you do. And this is where she meets the proprietor.
That guy.
That guy, played by Jim Sidow. Sidow. He doesn't have a name in this movie. He gets a name in later films. In this movie, he's just known as the proprietor. He runs, I guess, a barbecue place. Or like a gas station, or a gas station / barbecue place. It's Texas, so probably a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And this is the classic, you think he's going to help her. It immediately becomes clear that he's not going to help her.
Did anyone think he was going to help her when they first saw this movie?
Well, I mean, he's set up that way. He's set up as he's goofy looking. He kind of looks like evil universe Fred Rogers. Like, if Mr. Rogers had, like, a twisted twin who disappeared and would appear late at night, he would look like the proprietor from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
He's not even called the proprietor on this website. He's called the old man.
He's not that old. I'm closer in age to him than I am to you.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, I guess that would, because I'm an old man.
No, because you're my father.
I'm an old proprietor. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of goofy. He immediately tries to tie Sally up, though, so we know something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You would think, though, I mean, this guy is built physically. He is built like one of the Blair Witch Project stick men. He does look like he could be bested in combat by, like, strong words.
By me.
So, I guess, like, just the fact that Sally's already freaked out having witnessed her brother get horribly murdered in front of her, I guess we're, like, that's why she's just unable to like fight back against him, because he ends up knocking her out.
And with a broom, right?
With a broom, like, which is a really weird way to knock someone out.
I mean, I guess if you hit him in the right spot on the back of the head, it's not that difficult, but...
I guess he's trained in the dark art of ninjutsu.
Well, I mean, we know that he's had experience with this, probably.
That's true. We definitely know he has, because they did find a number of abandoned cars mm-hmm. by the house. So we know that this is... The long and short of it is he's part of the bad guys. They are clearly making people into barbecue.
Yep.
Like, they're eating people. They're cutting people up. We've seen Leatherface sawing people up in the kitchen. They are clearly they keep showing close-ups of the sausages and the meats that are cooking in his little like mm-hmm. smokehouse. It is very clear that this guy is part of the group that's cooking people for food.
Yeah.
So he brings Sally back to the house, and here begins the most agonizing sequence in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is the dinner scene. Sally is made to sit at a table where she's tied up. They wheel out. Well, we left out that we have seen at this point the corpses of Grandpa and Grandma. Mm-hmm. They wheel out the corpse of Grandpa, who is amazingly still alive.
Grandpa Sawyer.
What does he look like? What does he look like?
A monster.
He looks like a mashed potato man.
He looks like he got a prosthetic face, but it aged.
like the latex aged?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason that they sell Grandpa Sawyer masks, like you can buy for like Halloween, mm-hmm. and they don't look any different than the actual Grandpa Sawyer.
Yeah.
It's cheap. It's as good a makeup as they could do, keeping in mind that this makeup was being done in 100 degree heat.
He's 124 years old.
He's supposed to be 124 years old, which I'm like, whose grandpa is he? Like, that's old for a grandpa. Like, whose grandpa is he? Is he the proprietor's grandpa? Is he Leatherface?
Leatherface is actually supposed to be old in the first movie.
Is he? I guess we don't really know. We know that the hitchhiker, I guess, is Leatherface's brother at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So they cut Sally's finger and they stick it in Grandpa's mouth, and that's what wakes him up.
Because it says that Leatherface was supposed to have been born in 1906.
Where does it say this?
On the internet.
This is all like later. This is not stuff that we get from the actual movie.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how old he is in the first movie, because I think he's supposed to be old.
So if Leatherface was born in 1906 and it's 1974, that means he's what, supposed to be 68?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he comes across as a 68-year-old, specifically if Ed Neal is supposed to be his brother.
That's true.
Whose like,
grandparent is this then?
I mean, if Leatherface is supposed to be that born then I guess it makes sense that the grandpa would be that old. But who's the proprietor? Is he their brother too?
I don't think so.
I mean, he could be. He doesn't look much older than a man in his mid-50s. Ugh, none of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre timeline doesn't add up. So they stick her bloody finger in his mouth. Grandpa wakes up. They try to get... Grandpa used to be the best killer in the slaughterhouse. So they try to get Grandpa to kill Sally by hitting her over the head with a hammer.
No.
He can't, because he's literally a man made of bones and mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
He can't lift the hammer. He does drop it on her head a few times, which physically made me recoil, because I'm quite certain that they actually dropped a hammer on poor Marilyn Burns' head.
That sucks.
She escapes she escapes for the second time in the movie through a window. Like, one thing you can say about Sally, she is not afraid of leaping through plate glass.
I mean, at that point...
She runs off. She's being chased by the hitchhiker. She's being chased by Leatherface, who has his chainsaw. The hitchhiker is, as I said earlier, is not trying to catch her. He's just making fun of her.
Because
mm-hmm. he's on top of her, but he keeps just waving his arms around.
Okay, now it says... Oh, there's like so many different timelines for these movies.
Right, right. Keep in mind that like Leatherface, this movie has been rebooted and redone like a million times.
In the first movie, he is born in 1938, in the original timeline.
38.
Okay. Yeah. So he is not
68 years old.
Old.
So
I assume.
So given, he's supposed to be 36.
Yeah, I assume given the information we receive later on in the series about the grandfather, that he's not actually, he is more like their great great grandfather because he's like being kept alive through blood magic.
Yeah, I assume he's some kind of like marshmallow vampire.
Because it says that he's kept alive by drinking the blood of his family's victims.
I guess. I'm just going off what we see here.
Mm-hmm.
So the hitchhiker chases Sally. She runs into the street. The hitchhiker follows her. But this is where the dual truck comes in.
Yay.
And crushes the hitchhiker right on screen. This is like the only real death we see, like, just right. It's just right there.
Mm-hmm.
We see this man's face get run over by several tires.
Yep.
The truck driver is the only person of color in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of a heavyset black man.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't know what's going on, but he does try to save Sally. Like, she like runs up to his truck, but Leatherface comes up to the driver's side door, and instead of him just driving off, they then exit out the passenger door and go running up the road.
Yeah.
Then a pickup truck pulls up and Sally jumps in the back and escapes.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the truck driver?
He dead.
Is he? Because Leatherface, who previously tripped and fell and cut his own leg with his own chainsaw, then just starts to dance.
I assume the truck driver just was like, all right, bye.
Yeah, I hope he made it away okay.
I'm going to assume he did.
The young guy who's driving the pick-em-up truck, you don't see him very well, but you can tell he's a little freaked out because Sally's in the back of his truck screaming. And there's a man dancing with a chainsaw in the middle of the street.
Covered in blood.
Yeah, she's coated in blood. Some hers, most the actors. Yeah, and then Leatherface just dances with his chainsaw for a while. He swings it in the air. He throws it, tosses it around, holding on to it.
There's no listed death for the truck driver.
Well, that's good. I assume he started running and just kept on running.
Yeah.
And then credits, and the audience is left going, what did I just see?
Yep.
What just happened? What just happened? I don't understand this movie. It's 1974. I've never seen a movie like this. I thought New Horror was going to keep being like Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was what was going to... I thought that was it. Instead, I got to see this. And this is not very much fun. And also, unlike most new horror, this doesn't reflect like the horrors of the suburbs.
Nope.
Or the horrors of modern life. It just reflects a person being terrorized by cannibals in Texas.
Yep.
The end.
Yay.
So, my question for you right off the bat is, would you ever watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre again?
I've said no 3 times now.
Yes, but you have watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre several times.
3 times now.
I can honestly say I don't think I ever need to watch this again.
Yeah.
I will say that I think I'm going to watch the rest of them, though.
I haven't seen any of the other ones.
I haven't seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 since high school, I guess. And it's a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a long time since I've seen it, and I am curious about watching it again. I know a lot of people openly love it. They think it's probably like they're the best of the series,
mm-hmm.
just because it just goes full in on the jokes,
mm-hmm.
And like the dark humor. Leatherface, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, I don't think I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Next Generation was hugely controversial because it starred Matthew McConaughey and what's her face from the Chicago movie. I can't think of her name all of a sudden. She won an Oscar for Chicago. I think Chicago. In any case, I can't think of her name all of a sudden. She has blonde hair. In any case, two Texas actors, they were both in it. The movie got like delayed and then like re-edited and recut and released like in a weird like chopped up version that isn't very good. And people were disappointed because they thought it was going to be like the rebirth of new horror. It was like in the 90s and people were getting tired of like the slick 90s horror. And so people were like, this is going to be a return to like Slaughterhouse Horror. And then it just sort of came and went. I did see the remake, the reboot from the early 2000s, and that is unpleasant. Mm-hmm. That is an unpleasant movie. Just like, oh boy, just sitting through that was an experience. Mm-hmm. And then I never saw the rest. Texas Chainsaw 3D, which I mistakenly said was a reboot earlier, is actually a direct sequel to the first movie. And it involves like recreations of all the locations. It's about a descendant of, I think, Sally, who goes like back to the house. And it got terrible reviews, but it's kind of been reevaluated in later years. And some people are like, it's actually a decent enough as a sequel, like an homage to the original. They're like, it's actually a decent enough film. Mm-hmm. And then there was another Leatherface movie that came out about Leatherface's origins recently. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of these movies. Leatherface has popped up in comic books, in video games. He's an icon. He's an iconic character now. And Tobe Hooper was hoping this movie would get a PG when he made it.
What?
Tobe Hooper was hoping this movie would be rated PG. He made this movie with the intent of it being a PG-rated film, which is why he didn't show any blood and kept the gore mostly off screen. He thought this movie was going to be rated PG. It was rated X.
Yeah.
So he did a bunch of cuts and got an R rating from the MPAA. However, it was released uncut in a lot of markets because the people accidentally released the uncut version. It was very controversial. It was, I believe, banned in Great Britain for a long time as part of like the video nasties. It was just considered just abhorrent for many people. A lot of countries wouldn't release it at all, or they wouldn't release it uncut. And it remained super controversial for a long time. Mm-hmm. It got a lot of good reviews, though, even from like Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel, who typically were down on these kind of movies. Just because I won't say they got like glowing reviews, but people were like, this is different. I can't write this off as just shock and schlock. Like there's something else going on here, that people compared it favorably to Night of the Living Dead. Like it's low budget. It's shocking to see, but it's got a conscience and a point of view and we can't really like take that away from it. Mm-hmm. So, even Rex Reed said it was the most terrifying film he'd ever seen. Like, it really just hit people. It really hit people hard when it came out. It made, of course, tons of money, and none of the actors saw a dime of it because of their terrible contracts. Mm-hmm. I don't think Tobe Hooper really saw much of it because it all went to his backers and to, like, the mob. Because it was the mob who helped distribute this movie. like literally the mafia, which had a hand in distributing a lot of pornography at the time, wanted to break into like more legit filmmaking, like film distribution. And so they agreed to distribute this movie and they kept most of them. Like they had most of the money. Like Tobe Hooper didn't make much off this, which is why he went on to make sequel, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Like that was the movie that he was like hoping to really make money off of. So So yeah, and it's gone on. It's considered a great, a classic of horror cinema, and I totally agree. Mm-hmm. I think it's a horror classic. But this does lead me to a big question. Our man Guillermo del Toro. This is not what I think of as a typical Guillermo del Toro movie.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't strike me as, like, the kind of movie that ends up on this list. I can't figure out what it is about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre that made him put it on this list. Do you have any ideas of your own?
I mean, it's a classic horror movie. I'm sure he saw it a lot.
Right.
And I'm sure that, I mean, it's not, it might not be like one of his favorite movies, but none of, like, this is his ecstasy of influence, not his, this is my favorite movie list.
But I wonder what the influence is. Like, I wonder what he considers.
It could be just the family dynamics and the cannibalistic family. It could be anything. It could honestly be anything.
I'm wondering if, like, I mean, he loved Toby Hooper. When mm-hmm. Toby Hooper died, he wrote, Toby Hooper was a maverick and a rebel and a gentle, kind soul. An unlikely combination and a great loss. He changed genre films forever. Mm-hmm. As far as influencing Guillermo del Toro, the only thing I can think of is maybe as you said, like the weird, like the fact that the weird family was the icon of the movies. And not the survivors, not the non-monstrous characters. Maybe it is the fact that, like, we get Leatherface, who is this bizarre, almost sympathetic character, who you see has a lot of, like, pain in his life, is abused by his family, is just trying to, like, make a good dinner. Like, maybe that's what it is. Like, maybe that comes through. I do like the set dressing is very cool with all the chicken feathers. Mm-hmm. So you have this, like, you have a very specific art direction that is as shocking as, like, the actions of the movie. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, he doesn't even, all he says about it is, he has one tweet that says, the tagline for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, "Who will survive and what will be left of them?" has been bouncing in my head all day. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Like, that's what I can find on him talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I mean, the fact that Survivor Girl doesn't, like, she survives, but does she really? Like,
yeah.
There's the you see that she's genuinely psychologically damaged by all of this, and she's not going to be, she's considered a survivor girl, but is she really?
Yeah, I don't see much good coming of the at least the next few years of her life.
Well, doesn't she end up dying in a mental institution?
Again, I haven't checked out the sequel, so I'm not
okay
totally sure. But according to Guillermo del Toro, he did become a vegetarian for a year after seeing this movie. So is that a big influence? I don't know. I guess there's not a whole lot out there. Yeah. Just, I guess he just really liked the movie. He became a vegetarian.
Not even I would do that.
Yeah. This isn't about, like, mainstream meat production.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just because it grossed him out.
I guess. I would say to our viewers, if you haven't seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there's no reason not to. I mean, it's streaming on, I think, Shudder. Mm-hmm. It's findable. It's viewable. It's not long. It's like 80-some minutes long. It's just, know that it is, while it's not gory, it is grueling. Mm-hmm. It's not a kind movie. And the last 20 or so minutes are basically a woman screaming in terror and in pain, while a bunch of goofy goof-offs sit around a kitchen table with her. You can definitely see the influence on, like, Rob Zombie and, like, his movies. But I don't know. I don't know. It's a strange, strange movie. Also, if you're looking to buy it, there's like 1,000 different versions of it out there. Just so many, so many. Get the ones with the most commentary tracks. And there's so much archival footage and documentaries and making of. Just know that everybody hated making this movie. Nobody made money off of it. Everybody in later years went back and were like, well, there's money to be made on the convention circuit. I guess I liked making this movie after all.
Yeah.
So that's basically Texas Chainsaw Massacre in a nutshell. Thumbs sideways from me. I don't regret having seen it so many times, but I don't think I'm ever going to watch it again.
I don't know yet. I'm 18. There's still plenty of years for me to continue to watch this movie.
Very true. It's not really a good party movie either. Like,
no.
Let's have some friends over and watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, unless it's like a really weird party that I don't want to go to.
Unless it's my kind of party.
Woohoo!
Where it's just me.
Which you just had when you rewatched the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So, Ollie, what is the next movie on the Ecstasy of Influence? Don't say the B movie.
Well, I didn't want to watch the B movie. Thank you very much.
What is the next... Assuming we don't get Spirit of the Beehive, what is our next movie?
Oh, not the actual B
movie. Not the actual B movie, the Spirit of the Beehive.
I was like, I've never said the B movie in response to this question. I don't know what kind of horrors you've had to live through. I have no idea. I've managed to guess it pretty consistently, but I have actually no idea.
We are dipping back into the well of a filmmaker we have seen several movies of so far. Our friend and yours, Mr. Stanley Kubrick.
Nice.
It's a Stanley Kubrick movie from 1975. It is Stanley Kubrick's Barry Lyndon.
That means nothing to me.
Barry Lyndon? Barry Lyndon. We are going to be watching the Stanley Kubrick movie that many people skip over.
Oh, great.
The 3-hour historical epic, Barry Lyndon, which many people consider a great movie now. So it's widely hailed as a fantastic movie. It's just because it's not science fictiony or like dystopian-y or anything. A lot of people like disregard it just when they do their Stanley Kubrick rewatches. But Mr. Del Toro likes it, and I guarantee you there are no wheelchair bound people getting chopped up with a chainsaw in it.
Cool.
This I promise you.
I'm looking at stuff about it right now.
Well, no spoilers.
Every part of my life is a spoiler.
It stars Ryan O'Neal. That's all I need to know.
At least we don't have to watch Clockwork Orange.
At least. So count your lucky stars. And after Barry Lyndon, we are dipping into some Giallo. So
nice.
I am happy to do that. So
I'm so hungry.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join us for Barry Lyndon next week. Or next time. Next fortnight.
Next life.
Because I am Phil.
And I am Ollie.
And we'll see you when
it's
Del Toro time.